You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really happy to have with me Charles Hugh Smith. He's been with us a number of times in the past. Always enjoy his excellent essays that are on the web, and you can subscribe to his special ones by providing a donation to his work. He is a very independent person, and he provides information that you won't get on the mainstream media because those people are bought and paid for. By special interests, but Charles, his special interest is I think I'm safe in saying that Charles' real interest is the truth, the objective truth, and that's why I enjoy reading what he has to say. If he's not bought and paid for by someone else, it's Charles speaking for what he believes to be true. And unfortunately, more and more it seems these days, if it isn't the right kind of truth, the truth so described by certain special interests, then it's not welcome. And that is, I think, very unfortunate. But Charles keeps on speaking, and he keeps on saying what he believes to be true. And for that, I'm very thankful and very happy to welcome him. Thank you for being with us again, Charles.
It's always my pleasure, Jay.
And it's always my pleasure again to tell people to go to oftwominds.com, oftwominds.com, to get in touch with Charles and all that he does. You're talking to us from Hawaii, and I think you said it's around 10:30 or something like that in the morning in
yes.
Hawaii, 3 o'clock here in New York. Okay, well, and you had been living in California, but I think now you're permanently in Hawaii. Is that true?
Yes, I've joined the exodus. Although I do have deep roots in Hawaii, I went to high school and college here, and started my first business here. And my wife's from here, so.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I've never been there. I think it would be nice to go if we ever get past COVID. I just don't like the idea of wearing a mask for 24 hours and anyway, on an airplane or whatever. So, but anyway, I'd like to focus on your article, your January 27th article, The Coming Revolt of the Middle Class. You know, I've been looking at statistics. They show that up until about 1971 or so, income distribution was quite egalitarian in the United States. CEOs made more than average workers, for sure, and doctors did pretty well, and some other people, but it was nothing like the kind of disparity in income that we see now. And there's a chart that you've shown on one of your recent essays that shows that something like, the super wealthy, the 0.1% of the population, garner nearly all of the income growth. So wherever the GDP is growing, they're capturing virtually all of it. What do you think the cause of the demise of America's middle class? What do you think the cause of this demise is? Because once upon a time, America's middle class was looked at as sort of the envy of the world.
Right. Well, Jay, that's a big topic, but I think it's really critical to the path of the nation's future. If we cannot recover the widespread prosperity that that we call the middle class, then we're going down a path that leads to bad things happening when the prosperity is not widespread, right? And it's not there's no social mobility for people to say I can get a piece of that if I just do work hard and do the right things. I think there's a couple of reasons. One is, of course, that the central bank, the Federal Reserve, has dropped interest rates to zero. And back in the good old days, the government actually guaranteed you 5.25% interest on your mm-hmm. savings account. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not bad. I mean, you'd have to be a rich person and invest in a hedge fund to get 5% now. You get 0.1% now. So that I referenced an article in the Journal of Foreign Affairs, which is one of the premier publications in the U.S. And the author said that 97% of all the income generated from capital, meaning savings, 401 accounts, you know, rental houses, small businesses, you know, anything that we call capital. 97% of all that income goes to the top 10%. The bottom 90%, which of course includes the middle class, gets like gets a mere 3% of all the income from capital earned in the United States. So I look at this and go, well, this means that the middle class has been decapitalized. Their capital is no longer productive. Yeah, you own your house, but that's more like a lottery ticket nowadays than a source of income. So I think that's a big difference. And another study by this think tank, RAND, R-A-N-D, yes. Then they did a study, and this is, again, a premier institution in America. This is not some fly-by-night thing that started a few weeks ago. It's a premier think tank, and they found that since the early 70s, as you mentioned, from that time forward to the last 45 years, the economy has seen a $50 trillion transfer of wealth from the people who earn most of their money from working to people who just own capital. In other words, you know, the billionaires and financiers and hedge funders. And that's a staggering amount of money. Now, admittedly, that's over a couple of generations, but I think the middle class has been impoverished by the policies of the Federal Reserve and forces such as financialization and globalization.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly believe, and I think David Stockman made the comment on this show some time ago, that you can't have a thriving capitalist system if you don't allow capital to be priced by the market. In other words, if someone is going to suppress the price of capital by creating endless amounts of money, then what you're doing is you're encouraging consumption in a way that it isn't natural. You're discouraging saving, just as you said. And I know Ron Paul used to talk all the time about, when he was in Congress, he would criticize Greenspan or whoever the Federal Reserve chairman was, criticize them for this very thing, that he was essentially robbing the middle class, robbing people who were just working hard and playing by the rules and saving money and not living beyond their means. But then come along this notion of Keynesian economics, that somehow we can get rich by living beyond our means. Charles, it seems to me that something really big happened in 1971 when we went off the gold standard. It allowed, along with the petrodollar, America's military might being used to enforce the dollar as the world's reserve currency. It allowed us to create endless amounts of money based on debt, not on an asset. And then redistribute wealth to all manner of government entities and people and corporations that were tied to the government. Do you see that as a trend that might have hollowed out the middle class or been partly responsible for it?
Absolutely, Jay. There's an author, and of course, I love everything that David Stockman writes, because he understands how capitalism is supposed to work and once worked and it doesn't work. And that's kind of what we're talking about now. Yeah. There's a book out by, I believe the author is Matt Stoller. It's mm-hmm. called Big, and it's about the damage done to the American economy by monopolies, you know,
yeah.
and cartels, which are the same thing. And so we all know what big tech does. And there are lots of other monopolies, you know, hospital chains, big pharma. And so these have destroyed a lot of the entrepreneurial foundation of America, because they control markets and then they use their profits to buy political favoritism, right, to lighten the regulations and lighten their tax burdens. And so and another factor I think we should discuss is the heavy tax burden on the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're in the lower middle class and you've got a couple of children and you're making like $50,000 to $60,000, you're not going to be paying too much federal tax, but you might be paying really high sales tax, property
yes.
taxes,
yes.
you know, vehicle registration taxes in the hundreds of dollars. And then if you're doing pretty well and you're in the upper middle class and you're making $150,000 or even $200,000, you know, if you've got a kid in college or you've got healthcare expenses, you're taking mm-hmm. care of an elderly parent or something, you're not you're not doing very well because much of your money goes to taxes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, part of why so many people are fleeing high tax states like California is property tax can be $15,000 to $20,000 a year. Then healthcare is expensive. You know, vehicle taxes are expensive. Sales taxes. I mean, it's like, how much money do you have left? And when we think back to when we started working, we were able to keep a lot more of our money.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that, I mean, that's statistically the case. Our, what we had bought a lot more goods and services than what we're left with now buys.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be the case. And what is Hawaii like in those terms? Does it have a high tax structure?
It's a very high tax structure.
Yeah.
And so this is why we're seeing an exodus of very wealthy people from California who, because the wealthy can hire tax attorneys, and they have their foundations and so on and so forth, where they kind of hide their money and then they use their foundations to make money, and influence political, you know, activities. So the super wealthy have a lot more power to evade taxes than the rest of us, and I think that's part of why people are angry, you know. And I think part of what we're seeing with Wall Street Bets and the recent action in the market is people are angry that the system is so skewed, it's so rigged to the super wealthy in a way that, as you mentioned, was not the case pre-1971, pre-75, you know.
Charles, what do you make of this GameStop activity and the retail investors trying to smoke out the big boys? Or who do you think I don't really have a good handle on who these retail investors are. Are they the people in the middle class that have lost their way, or are they young yuppies, or I don't know what they call them, young people that are living in their parents' basements now, and might tend towards the left side of the political spectrum? Or do you have a sense, or what are your thoughts about GameStop and the revolution? Because we see some very interesting alignments in Washington, at least initially, AOC and the senator from Texas there, although AOC is saying she wants nothing to do with the guy that was the cause of the riots in Washington. And on the one hand, so you have AOC standing up for the retail people, and you have Elizabeth Warren on the other side, who's who's sort of defending the big boys on Wall Street.
Yeah, well, Jay, I think it's a fascinating topic, and there's a lot of angles to it, and I don't claim to be an expert. But what I see is, again, going back to the middle class, is that a lot of these young traders are apparently millennials. And and I think with justification, that generationally they have a much harder row to hoe than the previous generations. In other words, when those of us who were going to college in the 70s or early 80s, we didn't have huge student loans. College was cheap.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
And I could rent an apartment for, you know, a few hundred dollars. And now it's a few thousand dollars if you're trying, you know. So I think that there's a generational injustice that not only is the money flowing to the very top, but the people who are at the top tend to be older. And I'm part of that group that I was able to buy a house at far less amount of money than a millennial would have to pay now. And so I think that part of why the middle class will rebel is the generational inequality, right? That and it's not an older person's fault that they bought a house. But it's a matter of luck. The economy was sounder and fairer, right? And more open to social mobility. Now the social mobility ladder's been broken. And so the millennials are going, well, what do I do to get ahead? I guess I might as well gamble in the stock market, because that's how I see all these billionaires doing it.
Yeah, right. Right. And then when they come to understand that the deck is stacked against them, that really makes them furious. And you pointed out in a recent article, you talked about the problems that we have here, the structural problems with regard to the Fed and how the deck is sort of stacked against the little guy. Maybe you could talk about that. I think your article, it's the article that the stock market, fatally wounded by the truth, will stumble and crash, is an article that you wrote January 30th. You talk about the Fed and the stock market as being fraudulent. Maybe you'd like to just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I thank you. Thank you, Jay. And again, it goes to this, our topic of the day, which is the revolt of the middle class. That, you know, again, two generations ago, the middle class had retirement, IRAs and 401ks that were often funded by, their employer. Now that's less the case, right? And back then, you could count on some kind of safe return. The market, had its volatile moments, but in general, you were buying a piece of a company. Mm-hmm. Now it's really a casino, and it's rigged because the people who can front run us, in other words, they can look at the order book. When I place an order on TD Ameritrade, they can see it before my order executes, and they can buy it for, they can make a dime or a nickel or something. And then I've been basically ripped off because, they could front run my order. All of Wall Street is filled with these kinds of tricks. And so it's the market is not really fair and open. And people will say, well, it's always been manipulated back from the 20s. And we go, okay, yes, of course, large players can manipulate the market. But we're talking about the structure of it, that just, it's not just some bad players. It's we're talking about the whole thing is rigged from the ground up. And so it's very hard to navigate a casino. And that's basically what the American economy has become. And the speculators are the ones who are making billions. And so it's like the incentives are for speculation rather than being productive. And this is, I think, really devastating to the nation. The people aren't looking for ways to be productive because that's no longer profitable. They're looking for ways to speculate and rig some market.
Yeah, it goes to the in essence the lack of health in our economy as a whole, and I would argue that has so much to do with this massive destruction of capital by not allowing capital to be properly priced. Our first mortgage, Mrs. Taylor and I, was 17.5%, right in 1981. Capital really cost something, and there was a reason to save money. And you could invest in companies, and I would argue that you still can, but it's very difficult. It takes a lot of time. And also, the big guys have these advantages, and certainly on short selling, I think the markets are basically rigged in favor of the short sellers, certainly with the smaller cap companies. I've seen that. But I would argue, Charles, and let me know what you think, that it's this massive amount of money that's pumped into this system that goes in the direction of those that are privileged. No, whenever we see another $2 trillion pumped into the system, guess what happens? It doesn't go into the Main Street. It goes into Wall Street. So Wall Street has the money, and they bid up stocks. That's why that 0.1% is gaining all the wealth. That's the way I see it.
I totally agree. And I think everybody that looks at the economy and the financial system would have to agree with you. That those closest to that huge money spigot can then buy up everything and manipulate markets and establish monopolies. And the rest of us are left with a trickle down, which statistically turns out to be 3%. 90% of us get to share 3%. Of all the wealth being generated, and that's a statistic that I think everybody should really think about.
But I would say that's a recipe for a disaster, and I wonder if what we saw last summer, with people on the left tearing apart cities, wrecking, setting on fire public buildings, and then this latest fiasco in Washington D.C. If that isn't a symptom of what you're talking about, this disparity of income and wealth. But Charles, you mentioned in one of your articles, you said America has no plan to reverse this destructive tide of neo-feudal privilege, is the way you call it, or pillage. With just 2 minutes left, maybe you could just comment very quickly on what kind of a plan do you think would be needed to restore the kind of health that we enjoyed in the 1950s, 1960s? 1970s?
Well, great question, Jay. And, of course, I think you outlined one part of critical part of the answer, which is we have to get rid of the Federal Reserve and other central banks managing markets to benefit the privileged. So, in other words, capital has to be freely priced on the market, right,
uh-huh.
and along with risk. And the price will go up because capital should be expensive, because then you're going to make wiser decisions with deploying it. I think we also need to restore the ladder of social mobility, which means making it affordable and easy to start your own business and become mm-hmm. self-employed.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, that's just become a regulatory nightmare. And so very few people have the ability and the skills to do that. And then we can teach people those skills. In other words, that should be a core part of our education, not just, you know, math and science to become a technocrat or
yeah.
an employee for some corporation that has a monopoly, but to start your own business. And so we need to get rid of all the deadwood regulations. We need to lower taxes by lowering the expenses of the way we live and our government. And so we need to get back to the frugality that you talked about, but also focus on what does it take to get social mobility. And, you know, what's funny is the U.S. military has done a better job than the rest of American society in offering social mobility to its mm-hmm. its the enlisted people.
Yeah.
They have a meritocracy, and if you do the work and you learn what you got to learn and you get along with people, and then, you know, you can rise through the ranks. And that's – we need to take that model and apply it to our entire society. Not necessarily, I'm saying – in a military sense, but to take those lessons that the military learned and has
yeah.
applied and apply them everywhere.
And
so we need social mobility restored.
Yeah, amen to that. And it doesn't matter race, creed, or color, or religion, or whatever. It's if you do the job, it's a meritocracy. And I think we're losing that to a great extent. I would also argue, Charles, that we ought to teach kids about capitalism in school. They have no idea. They don't understand a supply curve or a demand curve and why it makes sense. But if they could see that in their real lives, it does make sense. If people understood capitalism, but they're never taught it in the schools. So that's another thing I would add to you. Excellent. Definitely I agree with all that you've said. We are out of time. Charles, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. It's always a pleasure. Your insights, and again, it's of2minds.com is where people need to go to sign up and learn to know Charles and sign up for his letter. Very good. Thank you, Charles, for being with us.
Thank you so much, Jay. It was my pleasure.
All righty, folks. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, I'm going to have David Duffy, former portfolio manager and author of The Coffee Can Portfolio. He's with me, as well as Dr. Quentin Henning. He'll be here to talk about Irving Resources. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Novo Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. Novo has recently partnered with Sumitomo Corporation of Japan to evaluate, advance, and develop the company's Australian gold projects. With over $40 million in cash and $60 million committed from Sumitomo, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.